Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast for the second time this week, if indeed you have finished The Last of Us. If you haven't seen, we did a spoiler cast earlier this week. I think it was the best of anything, not just spoiler casts, anything you bloody like. I'm joined today, however, not to talk about The Last of Us 2, with Jesse Gomez and Matt Perslow. Thank you for joining me, boys.
Hello.
Glad to be here, Joe.
You sounded so meek, Matt.
Hello. I'm just here for the ride. We'll build up some speed.
We need to get warmed up in a metaphorical sense, not a normal sense. If anyone from abroad is listening, England is seasonably hot.
Yeah.
Which, by the standards of our friends in the west coast of America, makes us look like absolute
cowards.
Little freaks, coward boys. I keep talking to people, I'm like, oh, it's like 26 degrees. And they're like, let me work that out in Fahrenheit. Oh, you fucking dickhead, because I'm sitting here just like sweating down my face Zoom calls all
everyone
day.
Everyone in America is like sick AC, that's fucking super effective, and I'm like a disgusting ice cream just melting.
Yeah.
It's gross.
I'll tell you what, old terraced houses were not built for this. No. Right, before we start talking about anything, I just want to do a quick update on my old charity run that I'm doing in a week that I'm terrified about now because it's hot. I was going to say that we're really close to the goal, but I have just checked my Just Giving page, and my goal of £750 has just been smashed.
Oh.
By one Rick Powell, who 52 minutes ago gave £125.
Damn, that's amazing.
I will say that he says he'll double that donation amount if I shave my moustache off and post a video, which you've really put me under some pressure there because I like the moustache now. This isn't even ironic anymore.
Is it not going to grow back quicker, though? And you're doing it for a good cause. Is that a myth? I don't know. Everyone's always told me that.
I'm not sure. We'll see how it goes. But I have also been told that our good friend Joe Beard will double his donation if I do the worm at the end, or at least attempt the worm at the end, and I may try that one.
One like hot floor. It's going to be a burden.
Yeah, just hot concrete, stinking concrete. So thank you very much. That's fucking amazing. Like, I was expecting to have to beg, but I don't have to. What I will do is say that it would be amazing to get to £1,000, which is only £250 away if you can give anything. And I know everyone has been giving to charities right now. It is a strange time and it is a good time to give to a lot of causes. But if you have any money you can give for special effect, you can head to justgiving.com/IGNUK. I will be running 10 kilometres in July heat. It would be great if we could hit £1,000 to make it worthwhile for me to do that, because fucking hell. I did a run yesterday morning and I nearly fell over. Didn't make it home. Apart from hot runs, so to speak, we have been watching several streams this week for exciting upcoming games. The recently delayed Cyberpunk was shown off last night, Night City Wire. And I think we should have a good old chat about it. Cyberpunk 2077 got the Night City Wire, the first of several, apparently, streams for this, which is good, because I personally thought this stream showed less than I was expecting, so I'm hoping it's kind of parceled out a bit more.
I thought it was quite an odd mechanic. So it showed off what's called brain dancing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Which I thought, considering this was the first thing we'd seen in a year, quite an odd, muted, small mechanic to show off. And I'm sure in cyberpunk fiction, this kind of detective mode system is quite important. Like, we all know Deckard using the machine where he zooms and enhances and tickers around.
Looks around corners, impossibly.
And so it is an important thing of sort of setting the scene for cyberpunk fiction. So I get why it was shown. I was expecting something much more about choice and consequence and the scale of the world to be shown for the first time after we haven't seen it for 12 months.
Are those not like the kind of things we would expect, though? Because it started with that kind of, you know, bombastic trailer where you see the driving and the shooting and stuff. And I think it was a bit more muted, obviously, having that specific gameplay section, but showing off a more like unique kind of mechanic, wouldn't that be a bit more interesting compared to seeing the things we've seen already, I guess? Like,
is it a unique mechanic when it's not exactly what's in Batman VR and Observer?
I just think it's nice to see a little bit of a different thing than just other more shooting and driving. Yeah. I feel like
I'm totally happy that they've showed us that this game is a more varied experience and that you're kind of, there are those changes of pace. I've seen some like fairly varied reactions to it. I can't decide whether I think Braindance looks a bit boring or really interesting. It depends how that thing's going to be implemented. But certainly some people aren't really into it and some people really like the idea. I have to say, the one thing that section really convinced me of is that they have not done anything to convince me that this game doesn't feel like it was written by 9-year-olds who are pretending to be 40-year-old men. I've saved it here so that I can write it down. My favourite bit is BD freaks are ready to pay a preem for a real flatline.
I did not know what that meant.
I saw a really fun quote, well, not quote, like a tweet the other day, which was like, me in 1990s reading cyberpunk fiction. Why does everyone speak in slang? This is in like weird made up slang. Nobody's ever going to speak about this. Flash forward today. And then it was just, I can't remember what it was, but it was a sentence that we'd recognise from today, none of which were real words in the dictionary.
Yeah,
we are sort of moving away to speak.
But yeah, to go back to that trailer, like, that was the first time I think I remember cyberpunk being presented as something that wasn't like dark and moody and evil in some way, like them just being like, bah, 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 cyberpunk time. I was like, oh, this is actually quite fun.
So in a similar way, I think, you know, the trailer they showed off in 2018 at the Microsoft thing at E3, it was the it was the first proper trailer for it, where it was, I think it was a cinematic trailer, and it was the one where there was a bit where a hover car lands at a balcony and a bunch of cops come out and shoot That was a lot. That set the tone for Cyberpunk, which was not the tone I was expecting.
Mm.
That was a lot more like, Night City is actually quite a cool place. I'm sure it's grim under the surface, but it's not like, in Deus Ex, all of the cities are quite grim and they're definitely places you wouldn't want to live. Whereas Night City is definitely a place that you don't want to live, but I think it's got more of a cultural feel to it than I thought. And it's definitely been criticised, and I absolutely agree with these, where those cultures are definitely from a white man's perspective. And I've seen sort of a lot of people from Latin American cultures, especially when it comes to Jackie, sort of like saying that he doesn't feel like he's authentically from the culture that they're trying to perspect him. But to the game's credit, I feel that world felt vibrant in a way that when people that haven't come to London try to do London, what they understand is that they need a vibrancy of Camden versus Brixton versus, you know, Whitechapel and all of that. So I like that about it. It feels, as you say, jazzier than I ever thought cyberpunk could be.
What I like, Deus Ex always had, which I think is fucking amazing, particularly the Eidos Montreal ones. Feeling of these are futuristic cities that have grown up in the spaces between existing old cities. Like you get these like beautiful spires amid fucked up old buildings and ruined churches or whatever. What I quite like about Night City from a stylized perspective is it feels like, we just fucking bulldozed this place and it's now spiky future city. And it feels like authentically 80s cyberpunk, like that kind of that original sense of the just alienness of this landscape that I really like, although surrounded by the Badlands, which is very cool. And apparently seeing Night City on the horizon is incredible when you start in the Badlands area.
Like about that Badlands side is so I've never played cyberpunk as a tabletop RPG. I've only really ever done D&D, but it's obviously, it pulls a lot of its cues from 2000 AD. And that whole idea of Mega City 1, where Judge Dredd sort of operates, is in the middle of, I don't think they call it the Badlands. It's got a different, or it might.
It's like, is it like the Wasteland or? Mm-hmm. It's and one again, of those things.
Yeah, that idea of
Fuck
having a
zone.
But the idea of having this mad, glittering, overly corporate dystopia in the middle of nothing, and that approach to it, I think it's just such an iconic cyberpunk element that I'm pleased it's in here.
They released during the countdown timer. They flashed up three hidden screenshots, which they've now released as like 4K screenshots, and one of them is Night City in the daytime, and it looks absolutely beautiful. So I was just like, my current desktop background was shite, so I just stuck this on instead. But I did realize, I was like, this looks really cool. I look cool for having this. And then in the background, I noticed that one of the little LED sort of blinker signs in the background just says poo. I was like, oh, come on, CD Projekt Red.
Oh, God.
Let's have some kind of thought of, like, intelligence satire.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, obviously, The Witcher has a very different written style to anything in here. And The Witcher's definitely got its points where it feels like I think sometimes it can be very mature, and sometimes it feels like it's mature because it thinks this is mature.
Yeah.
Something which I also angle against the TV show as well. So I think it is inherent in the original source material as well. But yeah, I think because of the exaggeration of the satire of the cyberpunk genre, sometimes it comes across a little bit more obviously in cyberpunk. Yeah.
BD freaks will pay a preem for a real flatline.
God, what does that mean?
One thing that we should mention, I think, that's very, very cool is, or I think is very, very cool, is that the trailer shows a lot of story. Like, you can really put together quite a lot of what goes on. And then they did the flex of, like, that's just from the prologue, which
cool.
seems to be the 4 hours that everyone's previewed as well. So we've got two previews on the site, which is one, Ryan McCaffrey starting as a corporate character and playing through as much of the storyline as he can. And Miranda Sanchez starting as a nomad character, which starts you in the Badlands rather than in the city, and just exploring, doing no storyline and just seeing what's around. They're both well worth reading. I think, like, particularly Miranda's one really illuminated the game in a way that I haven't seen other places do before.
Yeah.
Not other places, even us. That's not me throwing shade at everyone else. although, you know. But I like this sense that, like, these first 4 hours are, it's somewhat, you know, it feels like you could spend a very long time exploring the city, despite being underleveled for certain stuff, before you get to any more story than we've been already told. And it feels now like the Keanu Reeves, what's he called? Johnny Silverhand moment is the key part of the end of the prologue. Like, that's what kicks you off to the next section of storyline, which... Yeah. If they continue, I really hope they continue not to reveal anything beyond, if they can, about the prologue. Maybe aside from mechanics that pop up later, but there's, I've got a real hope that that stuff is just completely invisible to us.
I mean, presumably, like, when those, three starting, like, characters, like, their story intersects, essentially, is probably when Johnny Silverhand appears, right? And that's when the story probably becomes more uniform,
I think it's more a case of when
he's like a brain implant, right?
Yeah.
So he's like a ghost in your head, basically. I think actually the origin stories intersect more earlier than that, because it's when you get given the first quest in the game, because all come from different walks of life to do the mission based on. So if anybody hasn't read, and you know, I'm not going to go into too much detail based on what I know from previews, just in case anybody doesn't really want to know, but there is a mission that requires you to go and do something with another sort of mercenary style character, which is Jackie, who's the Latin American guy that you've probably seen in a lot of the trailers. And that is where I think those opening sort of separate backstories intersect when you meet him. And it just means that the story sets it up that you come from different backgrounds. You're either in corporate and you're finding yourself, I guess, coming down from this weird corporate lifestyle into a little bit more of the trenches, or you're coming in from outside Night City. Or I can't remember what was the other one. There's the corpo, there's the nomad who's outside, and then
isn't that like a punk or something like that? Right?
Oh, is it a netrunner?
No, netrunner's a class, isn't it?
Life choice, cyberpunk. Cover for me.
But yeah, all of these come together and yeah, sort of like that leads into this opening sort of quest line that will, as Joe says, I think will lead you into Johnny Silverhand. Is obviously a major character in this, which I actually found quite interesting because as far as I understand from the research I've done around Cyberpunk, he's not a major character in the tabletop. He's part of the lore.
Yeah, fair enough.
He's obviously, do you know that he's in a band? He's like the lead of, I can't remember what that band is called.
Is the band Samurai?
It might potentially.
Because Samurai's the one that that refused our playing, as in like the real band refused our Samurai in the game. And they released some of their songs for the soundtrack. Right. One of which is an Easter egg on the back of the controller that you can buy for Xbox, which is mad.
That's cool.
The other life path is Street Kid.
Right. Okay.
So I guess that's you coming from literally the gutters of, of Night City.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love the idea of life paths, because it's a very tabletop RPG thing to do where you have a background, and that's a lot of RPGs. Mass Effect does this and stuff like that, where you have a background. Like Shepard could have been a war hero. He could have come from nothing and stuff like that. They don't have an impact on the way you play.
Particularly, they don't impact where you start, which is fucking amazing. Like placing you in different places in the world is such an effective way of dealing with that.
Yeah, well, Dragon Age Origins is the only other game that I know of that does that. So Dragon Age Origins has six, I think, prologue chapters, and it depends on if you're... And that's really granular. That's what your race is and what your class is dictates where you start. Mm. And that's very cool. And I don't see that done all that often. And I guess there's an expense to making content that people won't ever see, right?
Yeah, of course.
But that's also why I play RPGs. I want my runs to be different each time. And so, yeah, that excites me for the possibilities that come later on in the game.
I hope those choices like impact, obviously, the later story, because it would be a shame just to have like, you know, those that opening chapter just to be like starting location and a bit of like flavor text, depending on like what kind of star character you choose. And then it kind of stops, you know, after the game kicks in.
I'm guessing, I mean, this is perhaps unfair because we've seen how much work they're putting into this stuff. But my guess 100%. Would be we're looking at a very different opening and then kind of more small scale shifts in narrative based on your background. Like we've seen in the gameplay previously that you run up against a corpo stooge who like uses you to do stuff. And I'm assuming if you're ex-corporate, she's going to have very different interactions with you than if you're like someone completely outside of her sphere of knowledge, of course. You know?
So I think one of the things it does do, which is something that Divinity does, that based on your race and your kind of class and background, it will give you what are called tags. And those are the things that you'll probably know this from Fallout and Elder Scrolls, because they do this as well, where you'll have a dialogue option that will only be visible to you if you are of that background.
Mm.
So corpos will be able to talk to corpos on the same level and they'll know things. Your character might automatically know things because of their lifestyle and their background that helps you. I'm not going to say empathize with a corpo because I don't believe that's a thing that should be done. but yeah, because you think on a similar wavelength, you might be able to crack them and a street kid wouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing that Masquerade Bloodlines did with the different clans. Like, each clan talks to each other differently and stuff. And I'm hoping the same way Deus Ex has that, you know, freedom of being able to, like, tailor your own story depending on your own choices, like no other game has. I'm talking about the original Deus Ex. I really hope Cyberpunk is able to capture that. Because the modern Deus Exes haven't been able to do that,
my opinion. I think the problem is that, like, people keep comparing it to Deus Ex, and I think that's, like, high praise. But particularly the original... It's a game based around text conversations. You can do wildly different stuff.
100%.
We're not going to get... I think people need... Unless I'm wildly wrong and Cyberpunk is one of the most diversely and expensively produced games ever made.
That's the thing, like, producing Deus Ex did will cost so much money.
Yeah, in terms we're not going to get, like, being able to kill key characters and the game can continue... running in the same way because it's fully voiced. Like, that's a struggle.
Well, so I know for instance that you can kill an early boss before they're a boss.
Oh, but like that's someone that you could kill further down the line. Sure, that's a manageable thing. Mm. Like, whereas Deus Ex literally let you kill people who were key to the storyline. Like,
doesn't
you know,
even
like,
matter.
It's a comparison that I think unfortunately kind of hamstrings a lot of people when you have to get to this level of fidelity. Yeah. Is there anything in here that, or in previews, that worries you about Cyberpunk? Is there anything you think doesn't sound good?
From what I've seen, like a lot of people, because I've read quite a few previews for the podcast side, everyone's saying that, you know, the UI, drive-in and shooting, they're all serviceable. Like, they're kind of okay, but, and that, I think it comes back to Deus Ex, where I'm thinking of, like, in terms of that game, the story is why I'm playing it. It's not necessarily for, you know, the gameplay factor. As long as that is okay, as long as that's good, then, and the story is, you know, top notch, then I'm going to be happy. But shooting is one of the things where people seem to be really worried about. And I guess it's understandable.
Yeah. It certainly looks not amazing, but it doesn't look bad. There's nothing about what I've seen of the shooting that makes me go like, this looks like a shit game to play. That's it just like, looks like a normal game.
When you shoot someone in the head and then you see a health bar appear, for me, it's like, okay, now I'm starting to understand how that game is going to play in terms of shooting. Like, it's very clear examples and
it's
stuff.
It's weird how we've become acclimatized to the fact that swords feel like they suit health bars. Like, I don't mind hitting someone
really
over and
weird.
Over and over and just reducing a health bar.
Yeah.
And it feels odd to shoot someone and they don't immediately take a lot of visible damage.
Mm.
And I think the thing is, I know that it's called an RPG, and that's obviously because that's how you sell them, because no game is ever sold on the idea of being an immersive sim. Who the fuck knows what an immersive sim is? But I've always felt that there's a reason why Cyberpunk is in first person and not third, and a lot of this comes down to the way that immersive sims work, is they're based on this weird immediacy and intimacy with the environments that you're in, and the way that you plan out your approaches. And I think there's going to be a lot of that to it, which is the gameplay appeals to me on that side of the idea of being able to figure out how I approach something. Am I going to hack my way in? Am I going to fight my way in?
Yeah.
I probably am going to try to... Well, obviously, it depends on how the shooting feels. We have to point out that this demo, as I said about Outriders a few weeks ago, was done over cloud-based gaming. So there might potentially have been a little bit of lack of feedback, which
definitely people said there was input lag.
For me, I'm not a great fan of shooting things and having to wait for the health bar to go down unless the game feels built for that. Destiny feels built for that because it's all about mad waves and the enemies aren't recognizably human. So I feel the fiction fits. With Cyberpunk, I would have preferred a more immediate visceral. There's the word visceral, right? And it will be visceral because they'll...
Yeah.
I mean, you can have mantis blades which fold out of your arms and you can tear people up.
Yeah.
The one thing that I have read, and if anybody wants to read a really good beat for beat how that 4 hours plays out, I recommend Lab Bible, which a lot of people are just going to... I know people don't like Lab Bible, but to untarnish its reputation for what it has... my good friend Julian Benson writes for them, and he is a very, very good writer. One of my favourite writers that I've ever worked with. And he's written it's thousands of words long, but it will take you through the entire of that demo if you want to know what that prologue is like.
That's wicked.
But one of the things that he's highlighted that I am sort of like, oh, that's interesting, is the double-edged sword with its immersiveness in terms of you don't know when you're taking quests on because it doesn't do the whole thing of like, here's a person with an exclamation mark over their head. You talk to them. They say, would you like to do a quest? You say yes, and then you go and do it. It's so cinematic that you just end up in conversations and those conversations turn into plot lines.
That's extremely
cool. Sounds incredible. Like,
That's
something that I've wanted forever. But the double-edged sword of that is you sometimes don't know if you're taking on things that are taking you into places that you didn't want.
Yeah.
And it also doesn't highlight things in the world that are usable in order to make that immersion so much. And so Jules was explaining to me how he chose quite a lot of hacking paths, but didn't know what he could hack because it doesn't do the... Deus Ex did, especially in Human Revolution, highlighted things that were like, you can hack this.
Yeah, yeah.
But is that going to be an upgrade? Because we've seen footage before
with your Oculus
gun UI stuff appearing only if you have the correct upgrades for it.
Yeah.
So, like, I fucking love the idea that I have to buy a bit of my eyes to be able to see what I can hack. Like, that totally sells it to me. So if that if that could be a thing, I'm super into that. Mm-hmm. Like, if you have to literally build your hacker out with hacking pieces, pretty cool.
Yeah.
Is there anything... Oh, sorry.
No, carry on.
I was just going to say, is there anything from the next Night City Wire that you definitely want to see?
Hacking. Because it 100%. Will... So, the thing... Have any of you guys played the Shadowrun games?
No.
No.
So they are, again, based on a tabletop cyberpunk RPG, but it's a fantasy cyberpunk situation, so there are goblins and elves and shit like that in it. But it... So its equivalent of hacking is deck running. And when you plug yourself into the deck, it literally changes the entire environment into this weird Tron-like cyberspace where... And there are enemies in them which are kind of the equivalent of firewalls that you have to break through.
That's cool.
I want to know what... Because they are purposefully not showing off hacking.
Well, yeah. And you've said... You've been looking into some, like, German podcast stuff.
Yeah, so...
where they seem to have said it's, like, a fantasy thing?
So it sounds like, to me, when you plug yourself into the Netscape or whatever, you know, cyberspace is called in Cyberpunk...
Netscape Navigator, yeah.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, AOL keywords.
It sounds like it's going to represent those elements in fantasy sort of designs... Mm-hmm. One of the things that I know that you can do is you can summon demons, which I guess is the equivalent of you, say, summoning something out of digital code to break through a firewall.
I can literally only imagine the mailer demon that you get back when you get a bounce back email.
Hate that.
So, yeah, I want to see that. I say that has been... That came up through GameStar, who I've worked out through contacts of contacts are very well connected to... They've got good relationships with... CD Projekt. So I, from what I can guess, that is probably what we're going to be seeing on the horizon. I have reason to believe that they've got that right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's going to be, there's got to be a Night City Wire dedicated to hacking. It's a core pillar of the game and it's based on how we know cyberpunk hacking works in other games and other books. It's going to have something really cool about it.
Yeah. Well, they've done, they ended that, was it the last gameplay section where you're about to go into cyberspace and then they just cut there, so I'm assuming there's something beyond that that they don't want to show. I feel like that's enough cyberpunk now. Let's talk about a game that has been unfortunately close to cyberpunk throughout its entire life cycle so far, except now that it's no longer in the same release month. Marvel's Avengers from Crystal Dynamics. We saw this war table stream, which essentially, I think more than anything else, was designed to tell people what the fuck the game actually is, because we've actually had, on the press side, had quite a good idea of it since Gamescom last year, where they did a presentation that literally just broke it down because no one understood it. And they were just like, look, here's what it is. Here's how it plays. Play the tutorial and know that it doesn't feel as shit as it looked. And... here's the difference between story and co-op. And this felt like a stream version of that with a bit more story thrown in as well.
Yeah.
Personally, like, I'm still quite excited for this game. I've seen, like, mixed reactions. It obviously doesn't hold up well when it's the same week that everyone's playing Last of Us 2 and everyone's watching Cyberpunk streams. Like, it is not as nice-looking a game as those things. But it is aiming to be something very different. But, like, how did you two come out of it feeling?
It's my jam, I think.
Yeah.
Like, we know I love Marvel. And
They're still pretending you won't get to play Cap, Matt.
I know, right? How is this? How are they still doing this? They announced the game saying that one of the playable characters is Cap, and then every bit of marketing since is like, oh, he's dead. Died in a reactor, mate. There's nothing you can do. They put a statue up to him.
And obviously so Captain America dies real easy. So
bloody hell.
But yeah, I think what they showed in War Table, like, it's less to do with the structure of the game, because I think I was already into the idea of it being a Tomb Raider game that you played as a superhero in, but on the side there were all these missions that I could play with my mates. And obviously I quite like Destiny, so I'm into that. But I liked seeing how I can build a character, because that's the interesting thing about Marvel is Spider-Man works so well because... that game just has to worry about Spider-Man, and it's not got any RPG element to it, really. You upgrade what he can do so that he's better at those core things.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just dropped a pen.
Yeah. But from the very start of that game, you can pretty much do everything that Spider-Man, you want Spider-Man to do, right? Whereas Avengers seems much more based around you start with these little core abilities and then you grow them and grow them into which version of that comic book character did you read those comics and go, I want to do that. And you find those upgrades and you build around that.
Yeah,
I love the idea of building. One of the things that was great about the Iron Man footage was seeing him use the lasers to do like a spin around him. Well, that's the laser that he uses to cut. You know, in the original Avengers film, you see him cutting some stuff underwater to like break a section open. It's like, it's those lasers turned into offensive weapons.
Yeah.
I want to use that. And then I can put gamma rays in them.
Well, that's cool. That's what really excites, like you say, you're coming at that from like a story fan perspective of like fantasy fulfillment. For me, I've got the same feeling, but it's more just this like the breadth to which they're talking about these things working. And like the thing that really gets me is the fucking shrink ray. Like the thing that the shrink ray suggests to me, and I don't know if it's going to go beyond this, but this idea of status effects that aren't like he froze, he burned, he got acid. Like messing with stuff in a more fundamental way sounds super exciting to me. And I love the idea that I could, I don't know, put new bones in Hulk's hands that make people shrink. Like, that's fucking hilarious. What a strange idea. And so I'm super into that. I'm also, like, so we've just started an IGN first that Jonathan Dornbush has gone and played much more of the game than was seen in that War Table stream. Yeah. And one thing he came back with pointing out was that War Table stream points out your ability screen, and it showed for Thor melee ranged intrinsic abilities and intrinsic overcharge, whatever the fuck that is. But it sounds like melee ranged passive and then something else that's to do with the passives. What he points out is that there is a second tier of upgrades that are more delineated where you start like messing with the fundamentals of those things and go in different directions. And like the level to which that customization sounds like it goes really interests me. I love the idea of building, I don't know, like a Hulk that's built completely around just chucking rocks at people or like, you know, like just building weird versions of those characters. It's a slightly odd tangent, but part of the Summer of Gaming stuff yesterday, we had an interview with the guy making Torchlight. And he was asked who his main, Torchlight 3, and he was asked who his main was in the game. And what he said was, I don't really play mains. What I do is I'll take a character and then I'll build entirely the wrong class for them. Like everything that everyone normally picks, I don't pick it, and I pick all the stuff they don't, and I see how it works.
That's wicked.
I love the idea of being able to do that with an Avenger and like, I don't know, build a Thor who just doesn't use Mjolnir. He's just like, fuck it. I'm way better at punching people and kicking, like, or flying around or whatever. Something about that really interests me, and I'm super excited by the idea of it. If what they're hinting at is true, I love the idea that I can build like some freakish versions of the Avengers that we haven't seen before.
It's like you say, you're building a ranged Hulk.
Yeah,
and it's sounds all wicked. About being able to tear bits of the, because we know he can do the bit where he pulls concrete up and chucks it.
Yeah, all that stuff. Like,
building all of that, but it's concrete that's covered in pin particles, so when you chuck it at bosses, they shrink. I don't know like how far we can take that, and I imagine probably bosses are normally immune to status effects,
most
aren't
likely.
They? But yeah, the idea of taking down, you know, chunky enemies by shrinking them and booting them off the side of like the Empire State Building or something.
Because that's the superhero stuff that like you kind of think about. It's like, oh, well, what if they did, like in comics when they do stuff because they have the freedom of like total imagination, whereas games can't often offer the same thing, or films for that matter. I love the idea of being able to mess about with that. I also like, I think it's really suffered from the Destiny comparisons, even though a lot of them are apt, because I think people still expect this to be a game where you can play everything with everyone, when actually it's two games that are much more seamlessly stuck together, essentially. I like the idea that these co-op missions are essentially set in between story moments. They still help you in the story with your characters. Like you could go and play. If you know you've got a hard Thor mission coming up, you go and level, essentially grind with Thor to make him more interesting in a different Warzone mission. Like,
yeah,
there's something fun about that idea that I could just mainline the campaign first and know the story, and then I can go and play it with my friends, or I can really fuck around and like build something strange and then carry on the story with it. I think like there's a lot to be excited for me, and I think it's fair that people are like slightly not sold on the look of the game in particular, and maybe like, I've certainly seen like very action-y people saying the action looks a bit clunky, but it is ultimately a co-op online game which has very different needs for how action works. You know, there's a reason Destiny's projectiles work the way they do, and it's because it's a shared world game, you know. I'm excited to see how it works.
I also, in terms of the action, combat designer is the combat designer from God of War.
So that gives you a lot of faith.
Pardon?
Gives you a lot of faith, especially when you're playing as Thor and using that hammer.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can see the direct influences there, but he's not going to have that. Like, the project almost certainly doesn't have the money that God of War did.
Yeah.
Because it's not a first party Sony game, but I have a lot of faith in that. It's also, it's Crystal Dynamics, so I'm expecting the feel to be closer to Tomb Raider. I should point out, I think Rise of the Tomb Raider, one of the best games I've ever played. I adore that game.
Yeah.
And so the things that they can bring over from that, I think the cutscenes in this game look great. Like, I really think they've captured I know there's a lot of people that have they look like the B-Team Avengers or the Saturday Night Live equivalent of that, but I don't know, like, maybe I'm just a bit more used to seeing these characters portrayed in lots of different ways.
Yeah, especially if you're a fan of the comics as well, because, like, I mean, source material is key, right? And there's so much to draw back from. I mean, even during the stream as well, they said, like, just even customizing your character. Everyone's seen the kind of vanilla look that the trailers have gone for, whilst everyone looks fairly uniform. But you can go for an Iron Man that looks like he's from Superior Iron Man to Invincible Iron Man. Like, it's your choice how you want to make him look. And that's also what gets me really excited.
There's a shot in that trailer that if you look in the background, they're all wearing mad costumes.
Yeah.
And it definitely looks like Hulk is wearing Iron Man trousers with an arc reactor as a belt. It's fucking jokes. Like, I want to know what that is.
That's the, it's easy to, you know, someone to grab like a low quality screenshot, post it on Twitter and like, you know, take the piss out of how these characters look and stuff. But really, when you just take some time to actually watch it and think of how you're going to customize your own Avengers, like, it has to be worthwhile. It's going to be fun.
Obviously, I'm sad I have to wait long for Cyberpunk, but genuinely, I'm quite happy that one is out of the way of the other, because I know, I feel like I'm going to end up sinking quite a lot of time into both, and I think that's really exciting. Also, the idea that Cyberpunk might come out when I have a next-gen console, so I'm sure that my PS4 Pro won't explode, would be quite nice. So that's quite good.
I'd say that way that it's panned out is great. I also hope that, like, we haven't been playing a lot of games at lunch recently. I'm hoping kind of like Avengers might kickstart us back into playing together.
Avengers really looks like a lunchtime game to me.
Absolutely.
Like, it's got that vibe. I'm into that. I've also been watching some shows on the old Netflix.
Ooh.
It's the service that everyone and your mother loves. This is my section, shows Joe is halfway through watching. One is the third series of The Sinner. Have either of you watched The Sinner up until now?
No, I haven't heard anything about it. Is it similar to Mindhunter? Because I know that it's a detective show, right?
It's a detective show. It's not similar to Mindhunter in structure, maybe in like vibe. It's very grim. And it does an interesting thing where you essentially know the crime and who did it from the start of every series. The mystery is in finding out why the fuck they did it.
Like,
what drove them to these moments. And as you haven't seen it, I'm not going to spoil it because I think it's quite good. But series one deals a lot with like trauma and mental illness and PTSD and how those things can funnel into an act of violence.
Right.
The second is more of like a mystery around like a community almost. And the third one feels closer to the first one again. It's essentially, it's set up as nice man, works in a school. He's super cool with all the kids. I thought it was going to be a big pedo thing. It's not, as far as I can tell. He's like set up as basically like handsome young man. And then one night him and his pregnant wife are at home, and then his best mate from college turns up on their doorstep and something seems wrong. And right, at the end of the night, the two men have been involved in a car crash. The man who came to his door is dead. And it seems very clear that while he may not have done it on purpose, he certainly let the other guy die. Right, and then so the rest of the series is basically in working out why the fuck he would ever have done that. What I really love about The Sinner is that the only connection between these series is the detective, who is Harry Ambrose, played by Bill Pullman. And Bill Pullman's performance is so weird. like, in a good, like, not in a, he's doing something weird in a wrong way. Like, he plays a guy who is very clearly on the spectrum, but not in a uncomfortable or like, he just plays a man who is very, very bad at social interactions. Right. But is also like deeply sad about that. So there are so many scenes where he just can't, you can tell he wants to react to someone in a normal way and he just doesn't have the facilities for it. And he looks super uncomfortable about it. And it lends this like weird vibe because the hero of the story is a guy you know wouldn't like talking to you, which is not, you it's hard to like get on his level.
Is it a bit of a, have you watched Hannibal?
Yeah.
Is it a bit of like Will Graham? Because Will Graham obviously just can't, and he knows that he can think like a serial killer, so distances himself from everyone.
He's, it's less, I really, like, I fucking love Hannibal so much, but I think it's a more subtle performance than Will Graham. Like, Will Graham is very like, I distance myself because I think I might be a bad man. Whereas Bill Pullman's character is just like, just deeply unable to talk to people properly, and it constantly gets him into trouble because he's such a good detective, but every time he's talking to someone he just makes them feel really shit. It's so strange, like, but it, I think it's like, and it's also really sad, so you end up kind of loving him despite the things he's doing. It's quite hard to explain. I've not seen another, certainly not another detective performance like it, because you often get like troubled detectives, but I've certainly not seen someone who's just like, in the latest episode I watch, he gets like a package and somehow he makes getting a package like the most uncomfortable thing. Like, someone hands it to him and he looks really fucking confused about it and just like stuffs it under a desk, and then someone says hello and he's like, and it's this bizarre, like, weird reaction to receiving a parcel. And like, even, and the fact that that scene is stuck in my head, I think says something about it. I think it's really cool. I think this season is perhaps trading a bit too much on the storyline of the first one. Like, there's some very, both of these two series for some reason revolve extremely strongly around a single piece of music, and in the first series that was incredibly effective, and in the second one I'm like, the third series I'm like, why are you doing this again? Because that was the cool thing in the first one. Anyway, I think it's very good. It's worth watching. I think it's currently all on Netflix in the UK. The other thing I'm watching where not everything is on Netflix is Snowpiercer, which is quite odd.
This is based on the film, right? Or
it's based on the film, but it's nothing like the film.
Because I haven't seen the film, and whenever I've heard stuff about it, I've always thought it was a bit of a meme, but apparently it's quite a good film. Like,
it's director Bong, of
course. Yeah, it's Parasite Man. Because, like, so the original Snowpiercer is a French graphic novel, or comic book series, I can't remember which way around it was, that is about a world in which ecological collapse has led to everything being frozen, and the only people left alive that we know of are in a perpetual motion machine train with 1,001 cars. And it is separated into train classes. It's a very transparent metaphor, but it's quite an effective one.
Yeah.
First class, second class, third class, and then I can't remember if... Oh, yeah, it is the same in all of them. You have tailies, who are people who essentially stowed away on the train before it set off and have been segregated from society. They're like, you know, outcasts, essentially. And they're kept alive only because, you know, it's the decent thing to do, but they're given almost nothing.
Right.
The Bong Joon-ho film is like quite a broad satire in a lot of places. Like, it's an action film, ultimately, but it's very strange and very over the top. Tilda Swinton plays like this bonkers train announcer character.
Right.
And it's quite funny in places. And it has like, there's a bit of like Wizard of Oz, and there's a bit of like, it's almost
Bioshock
like
in there.
Pardon?
It's slightly Bioshocky as well.
Yeah, it's Bioshocky. There's something like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory to it. Like, it's like these overwhelmingly strange cars set next to each other. So we'll walk from one completely different location into another. And like,
yeah,
it's all quite over the top. The show is a police procedural set on this train, essentially. So
right. I mean, does it have the same characters? Because I don't know where to start, because I saw it appear on Netflix, and now I'm conflicted as to whether I should watch the film.
Like, they are fundamentally separate that it doesn't matter. Right, okay. The show is like, it takes all those elements, but there has been a murder up train, I think in third class, I can't remember, and they realise that the only detective on the train out of the 4,000 people is a Tailey, so they bring him out and they force him to do work, and then they try and, you know, there's coercion and like, will he betray his class to live a better life, blah blah blah. It's quite fun, it's quite interesting way of dealing with that stuff. Like, there is a lot I like about it, but there is some bizarre, like, there's a lot of overacting, and there is a lot of weird stuff that they don't, considering it's a TV show, they do not go into enough mechanical detail about how any of this could be working. Like, for instance, this train is 1,001 cars long.
Yeah.
And there is this character, Melanie, who is the de facto voice of the train. She's the voice of the, essentially, the guy who made the train, Mr. Wilford, has become a god substitute in this world. Everyone praises like Willy Mr. Wonka, Wilford. Then. Yeah, what? Like, or Wizard of Oz, basically.
Yeah.
And she's the voice of God, essentially. She's fucking Peter on the Rock or whatever. And she can appear anywhere on this train at any time with no explanation. Like, between scenes, she will be between first class and third class. And you're like, that would take you hours. It would take you hours to get here. I don't understand how they're not explaining how people are getting around this place.
So no one ever comments on the fact that she can suddenly respawn behind you.
She's in so many scenes and she's just like, pow! I genuinely spent a load of this series going, is the twist going to be she's triplets? Or like something insane, because I can't work it
out. Cloning.
And like, so there's a really fun, like, well, not fun, it's unpleasant, but like there's a very good class metaphor stuff. There's a lot of, you know, thinking around these issues and like how they'd be represented, and there's some good sci-fi fun, and it's not like the most interesting procedural I've ever seen, but like there's a good mystery, and actually it kind of, I'm six episodes in, which I think is as far as they've got, and the core mystery is kind of solved, and it's left, and it started turning into something else, which I think is quite cool. Like, it's
slightly Twin Peaks-y, that.
Yeah, it's kind of like stopped and segued into something, a different story, and you're kind of left lurched like, oh, right, I've been waiting for that to finish, and actually that's like halfway through the fifth episode, and then it just turns into something else. And I think that's really cool. But yeah, there are just like, there's occasional nagging things where I'm just like, the fuck is going on? Why is any, who's not told me what's going on?
Yeah.
David Diggs, most famous for Hamilton, plays the lead, and he is one of the most effortlessly likable people I've ever seen. Like, even when he's doing horrible shit, I'm like, God, David, you've got such a nice smile.
Quite a good not that it's a direct character replacement, but obviously Chris Evans is one of the most likable people in the world, so that's a good, I like that parallel.
But I genuinely think it's actually more interesting if you've seen the film, because I don't know how they got here.
Right.
Like the jump, because they specifically say it's based on the film, and I'm like, where?
Is the art design the same?
Sort of. Like, it's a lot more, I've only watched Snowpiercer once and it was years ago, but to me it feels a lot more muted, a lot more realistic. Like, the thing I remember about the Snowpiercer film is being absolutely bowled over bombastic by how weird it was. And not expecting that at all.
I would say the train car that's for the education car, which is, as you say, has that Tim Burton Charlie and the Chocolate Factory look to it. It's very, very bright, flat colours.
Yeah.
Almost odd shapes in the decor.
Yeah, actually, to be fair, that is quite similar in the show, looking at pictures of it. But yeah, it's more how everyone acts, like, Snowpiercer, just the film had just these weird performances that felt like not hammy, but like almost like purposely hammy, like they were trying to communicate something by being so weird and scenery chewing, whereas this is definitely a lot more prestige TV trying to, you know, have deep relationships and meaningful deaths and whatever. But yeah, it's worth checking out. I don't think it's like the best thing on TV right now, but it's a fun thing. I'm really enjoying that we're getting a few shows now and then that are dropping weekly. I like having something to look forward to in that way. So it's cool. Yeah. Matt, you've got a show you want to talk about as well.
Before I actually get onto that, I will say one of the other things I've been watching is recaps of what happened in season one and two of Dark, because it starts again this weekend.
Can you link me to some? Because I need to do that before Saturday.
Yeah. So there's an official one from Netflix, which is pretty good, but it's narrated by Adam from the show.
Oh, okay.
And therefore it's in German, which means it's a lot to take in 10 minutes. Yep. But IMDb do what's called the cheat sheet.
Right.
Which is quite a good and quite funny way of wrapping up an incredibly complicated show.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I do feel pretty prepared for Saturday now.
God, I cannot wait for Dark. Yeah, so good.
One of the best shows, I think, honestly, ever made. I adore it.
Is that on Netflix?
Yeah.
Yes, it's on Netflix.
So I've been meaning to start. I just wanted, because it is a German show, right? So do you guys watch, is it a dub or sub, or do you just, like,
watch it? I watch it. You can do either. I watch it subbed.
Right, okay, fair enough. I just wondering, like, what might be the optimal experience?
Sub.
Yeah,
fair enough. I would say sub. Like, the performances are fantastic, and they communicate a lot. I think you'd lose a bit in dub.
Yeah, can imagine.
And that's not just me, but I like sub dubs. That's not just me being a
prick. Yeah, yeah, 100%.
The thing I like about Dark the most is that it's maybe the best cast show I've ever seen. Have people in multiple time periods, and I don't know how they found people who look so similar at different ages. It is insane. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't know if Germany's just like a much, well, I guess, yes, for some reasons, a much smaller gene pool, but there's a certain element where you're just like, oh my God, how have they found a boy and a man who are identical people? Yeah, it's very cool.
But yeah, the other show that I've been watching, which has come as a massive surprise to me about how brilliant it is Harley Quinn, the animated DC show that is currently showing on E4 at the moment.
Oh.
So you can go and grab that from the All4 app, should you wish to use that slightly clunky piece of interface. But the Harley Quinn TV show is, imagine the Batman animated series, very much made for adults. It is an adult cartoon with an awful lot of violence and an awful lot of use of the word fuck. Occasional use of the C word as well.
That's so cool. That's the coolest thing you can do.
And that's the thing. So I was slightly put off by about the first 10 minutes of it because I thought it might be a bit try hard.
Right.
You know, seeing Harley Quinn beat and the Joker beat the crap out of things so that there's all blood and bones coming out and just shouting fuck over and over again at it is a bit like, oh, because I don't really get on all that much with adult animation shows. There's really only Archer I ever took to. So I was a bit like, oh, how are we going to go? And then I realized kind of what this show was gunning for, and I was all in on it. So it is basically what I wanted Birds of Prey to be.
Okay.
In the idea of Harley Quinn in the first episode very quickly realizes that the Joker is an abusive boyfriend. He is not a good guy. And it's sort of like about her moving in with Poison Ivy and they're kind of flatmates. And it's about Harley getting over the Joker, realizing her own self-worth and basically becoming her own supervillain. And so it's got almost like a Powerpuff Girls-y sort of element, but it's this mad violent thing. But it brings so much from the DC universe together in these kind of much more modern takes, where realizing that, yes, it's about Harley building a supergroup and all of these people in it are dreadful people, but I guess it's got a bit of Always Sunny in it, to the idea of it recognizes that these people are all horrendous.
Okay.
But it works with the jokes and finds the little bits of, you know, nuggets of them that are actually nice that you can latch on to while never shying away from the fact that these people just want to burn Gotham to the ground. But it also leans into the fact that it's a comedy, so it is incredibly funny. So I can't remember laughing as much as the first time Bane turns up and he speaks like Bane does in, you know, Tom Hardy's Bane. Sort of voice.
That's really cool.
And oh, they do it so well. And so the Joker is voiced by Alan Tudyk.
Oh, well, nice.
Okay.
And so he's got a great... He doesn't sound like Mark Hamill, which I like. He's got his own sort of approach to it.
Yeah.
Which I think is designed to make him just a little bit more slimy, so you realise that side of him. And the way that it explores one of my favourite things about the Joker is just his obsession with Batman and the fact that actually he's in love with Batman, but in a weird kind of, you know, he can't kill him because of the obsession with him.
Mm.
Harley is voiced by Kaylee Cuoco, Penny from The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
And it's like weird because, you know, I don't particularly like The Big Bang Theory and had no sort of rating of that, but
yeah. She
is perfect as Harley Quinn. She's got that mad bouncing that you think back to like voices like Arlene Sorkin and Tara Strong who have done it, and it's got that. And it, like, I think Margot Robbie is a very good Harley Quinn, but this is the Harley Quinn that when I read those comics, I get.
Mm.
So there's that about it, and it chooses interesting characters as well. Like King Shark is one of her team. You've got Clayface is one of the team
wicked.
Who's also voiced by Alan Tudyk. And the way that, because Clayface obviously can change his body, they have him as basically a Shakespearean thespian. So you get a lot of jokes through that. Tony Hale's in it as Dr. Psycho.
Always good.
Again, like a mad character from the side that we wouldn't typically expect. And I sort of like that we don't... I don't watch them so much anymore, but I used to quite like the CW stuff because it was an interesting way of seeing DC characters on screen. But I think because of the live action side, they have to be kept quite separate from the movie universes.
Yeah.
So you don't really get as much of the big characters. Whereas this can just use Batman. When it wants Batman, Batman turns up because it doesn't have to worry about the separation.
Who plays Batman?
Let me find out who plays Batman. Because he's not in it all that much, but when he turns up.
Because there's one guy who's like consistently voiced Batman for years.
Kevin Conroy, yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, no, so it's not. It's Diedrich Bader.
Ooh.
Who... It looks like he's more of a voice sort of actor, but like there are plenty. Like Lake Bell is Poison Ivy.
Okay.
And so there are lots of people in it that are good and are very good at bringing the charisma of their characters. And yeah, it's just genuinely really funny, which I didn't expect while having this quite serious undertone to it. It's about toxic relationships and it's about toxic friendships and about how, you know, Poison Ivy just wants what's right for Harley Quinn, but Harley Quinn doesn't realise that. She just thinks that this is all about becoming a supervillain.
Mm.
And it's odd. It's one of the... You know how The Good Place takes you on such an odd journey?
Yeah. Yeah.
That has got much more drama to it than a comedy would suggest. It's kind of that for an animated show.
That's cool. I'm going to watch that.
I really like it.
That sounds really cool.
I literally
had no idea it existed. So that is a fun thing. Right. Let's play a bloody game. Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah, and ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we're coming through. Yeah, and ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it in the search? Matt, if
right.
you will.
Yes, you guys played, was it last week or the week before that you played a game that was based around trophies and achievements?
Yes,
I did not play it, but I heard it.
I was the winner. Which
yes.
is
well done,
something
Jesse.
That doesn't often well, happen. So I just wanted to give myself a shout out.
Is that your first ever win?
I think it's like my third. And I've been here for a year and 5 months. God.
Let's see if we can bag you another one, Jesse.
Yeah, that would be class.
I've actually remixed the formula slightly.
Oh.
So what we've got is I've got four games. Each has five trophies or achievements. Or Steam achievements,
ooh.
You know, fairly agnostic going across all the platforms. And I've got both the name, but when I was listening to it, I found that maybe if I hadn't played those games, I wouldn't know based off the name of the trophy. So I've also given you what you have to achieve to get the trophy,
okay.
Which made finding the games quite difficult when they don't have achievement descriptions that don't just give away what the game was.
Right, okay.
But... four games. I think you've played all of them or would be aware of them.
Cool.
So I've tried to make work. So if you can get it on the first one, you get 5 points. If you can't get it and you end up on the last one, it's 1 point.
Nice.
In between.
Brilliant.
So first game, first achievement or trophy is Hang Time. kill three enemies while you're on a ladder.
I'm going to say Just Cause 1 through 4.
Metal Gear Solid 5.
No, I can see why you've chosen both of those games, but no.
Okay.
Any other bids?
Oh, are we allowed to guess multiple times?
I'll give you another go.
Hang time, ladder. Fun pun on a ladder. What games let you shoot while you're on a ladder? That's unusual. That's actually quite tough.
Wait.
Jesse's ready.
Are you having one of those moments, Jesse, where you're like, I've got this achievement?
It looks like you're about to have a nosebleed.
No, I swear, like, it's so hot in here and my brain's working. I swear I got this achievement like a few fucking months ago.
Really?
I swear to God I did.
Okay. Moving on.
Go to the next one, yeah.
Next trophy or achievement or Steam achievement is Companion Block. Only use one cinder block and bring it to the end.
Half-Life 2.
Modern Warfare. Modern Warfare. The remake.
It is Modern Warfare, Jesse.
Ah.
That's it.
I thought that was a secret enough one.
Wait, so what is it? Take a cinder block and put it somewhere.
Yeah, so there's one of the missions that is set when you play as Alex, where you can pick... I think you have to knock out... No, it's not when you play as Alex.
No, it is a stealth mission. It's when you're being escorted by someone else who knows the town and you're using cinder blocks to knock out enemies instead of your guns.
Yeah. So if you take one cinder block and only use that and get it all the way to the end of the level.
Nice.
The other ones would have been Driver's Ed, shoot the driver of the suicide truck.
Oh.
Okay.
Got something on your face, which is spit on Barkov. Which, if you remember the bit where you're torturing Barkov and you can spit on him.
Lovely.
And then the last one would have been trigger discipline. Do not injure any civilians in Piccadilly.
Okay, that would have been a big one.
Right. Game two. The opener of the eighth seal. Warn them of the coming end 8 times.
That sounds like some Dragon Age shit. Elder Scrolls Oblivion.
Warn them of the coming end. Final Fantasy 12. It's like a game where you go around chatting to people about being Captain
Final Fantasy 12 doesn't Bash have an von Ronsenberg, does it?
Pathologic so 2.
Pardon?
Pathologic 2.
No.
That's okay. A good shout.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a good shout. Right. Next one. Enemy of the physical realm. Bang up 5 inanimate objects.
Bang up.
What's the name of this one?
Enemy of the
enemy
physical
of
realm.
The physical realm.
Ooh.
Seems like a Joe game.
That implies that there's a non-physical realm to this game.
Control. It wouldn't be that, would it?
No, it's not Control.
Warn them of the coming end. All right, carry on.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Wait.
What?
Divinity Original Sin 2.
No.
Damn it.
No. I can see where you were
There's
coming
a coming
from there,
end.
Yeah. And the Void Woke and all of that. Yeah. Okay. Right. Fairweather T500 Vitreous Enamel. Suit up, head to toe.
Was that the title?
Yeah, so the title is Fairweather T500 Vitreous Enamel, and then the descriptor is suit up.
It's Disco Elysium.
It is Disco Elysium.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Shit.
This was the one where I wasn't sure if to put it higher or not, because I distinctly remember the Fairweather T500,
yeah.
But it's because obviously that is a quest of its own,
yeah,
right?
It's actually the enamel that got it for me. Game has fucking enamel armor.
Jesus.
Oh, yeah, the
oh,
one.
Oh, shit, it does.
The next ones would have been Unbelievably Boring Fuck, which is Say 7 Incredibly Boring Things. And then one of my favourite achievements of all time, The World's Most Laughable Centrist, Defend the Political Centre 7 Times.
Jesus.
Right. Next game. That's a Knife. Perform an assassination on an enemy. I will note, the assassination is spelt with a capital A.
Oh.
Hitman
Halo
2?
Halo 3.
No.
Call of Duty Warzone.
No.
Wait, how is it spelled? In terms of, you said...
Assassination, just with a capital A.
Right.
Take from that what you will.
Move. Assassin's Creed Odyssey or Assassin's Creed Origins?
No.
Those are called assassinations.
Right. Next one, then. Swap meat. Trade weapons with an AI ally in the campaign.
Okay.
Trade weapons?
Is it a Halo? Yeah.
You don't...
Halo 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5.
Shit, that is something you can
or do. Or ODST. Or Reach.
Yes, Joe.
Oh,
yes.
Crap. I was just letting it happen. What's wrong with me? God damn it.
Suddenly just going like, it's definitely a Halo, but how many Halo bloody games are there?
I was a bit concerned with this one, whether it would be that easy to get. So assassination obviously is what they call Reach, your backstabs.
Yeah.
Then the next one, the reason why I used Halo Reach is so I think the achievement that I've spent the longest trying to get is what I got as number three, which is if they came to hear me beg, which is perform an assassination against an elite to survive a fall that would have been fatal.
Oh, man.
Fucking took me hours to get. I think I spent an entire day getting that.
Jesus, dedicated.
It would have been Wake Up Buttercup, which is destroy the Corvette's engines and escort in under 3 minutes in the sixth mission on heroic or harder, which... And then Lucky Me, which is earn a triple kill while jetpacking in campaign, firefight, or matchmaking. And jetpacking is Reach was when jetpacking was introduced.
Yeah.
Right. So Joe got that at 4 points.
Nice.
Jesse, you've got to swing in hard here.
I'm going to do it, mate. You watch.
Right. First trophy is, or achievement, or Steam achievement, is Speed King. Obtain all time attack items together as one set.
Wow. What?
What the fuck is that game called?
Burnout Paradise. One, Jesse?
I was just about to say that, but is that the answer?
No,
oh, thank God.
Burnout
okay.
All
Forza Horizon
item.
2. I don't know.
He's squinted. Forza Horizon 3, 4, or 1.
No, it's not got anything to do with the Forza series.
Motorstorm Apocalypse.
No.
Did you say time attack items?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Speed King, obtain all time attack items together as one set.
That shit Mad Max game.
That was not a shit game. How dare you? It
made me fall asleep.
So good. Yeah, I cannot think what that is.
Yeah. Same.
Okay. About to make it. This one almost feels like it might be harder, but I think there's a number in here that might mean something to you if you know it.
God.
Speed Demon. Complete hard mode in under 5 hours, 41 minutes, and 28 seconds.
It's not Resident Evil. No.
No.
5 hours, 41 minutes, and what? 28?
28 seconds, yeah.
That feels like a massive clue.
The interesting thing about these is, so I didn't know about any of these achievements or trophies or speeds or Steam things before I was looking through this, which shows just there's a different side to this game that I didn't realise existed.
Okay. What was the first one again? Was that Speed? No, the Speed Demon.
Speed King, okay. Which is obtain all time attack items together as one set, which I did not realise there were time attack items in this game.
All
so
right.
It shows that... You'd
probably
need to
just
be a
isn't
bit deeper.
A normal racing game. Then
Doom Eternal.
No.
Doom 2016.
Right. I'm going to move on.
All right.
Dormin's Rage. Use Dormin's Breath Attack.
Oh, what the fuck is that?
Ori and the Will of the Wisps?
Nope.
Shit. Isn't that?
Dormin's Breath.
Shadow of the Colossus?
Yes.
There we go.
There we go.
God damn it.
Yes.
What have we got then? So Joe got a 3 and a 4. Ooh, and then Jesse got a 3 and a 4.
Oh, come on.
I didn't bank on you.
We need a tiebreaker.
I don't have a tiebreaker. Oh,
let's do the honourable thing and just, you know, virtually shake hands, Joe, and say it was a good match. Oh, God, I didn't want to see it. Love it.
All right.
For anyone at home, Joe is reaching through his webcam to shake Jess's hand. Yeah, you're both winners today.
Oh, look,
it's
good.
A hot, horrible day. Take pride in it.
Yeah, yes. Why not? I like that game.
Yeah,
I want to do more.
It's wicked.
Right, let's do some feedback. Because I'm warm. I've forgotten to put people's names on them. Jesse, you read the first one.
This is feedback from Oscar PB. He says, hello, boys. How are you all doing? Going back a couple of weeks ago from the food combos, boy, do I have one. During quarantine, I've been eating pot noodles nearly every day. I know it's sad, but I have been adding a little twist. Every time I eat one, I add a dollop of sweet and sour Chinese dipping sauce and drink it with a glass of semi-skimmed milk. For context, original curry pot noodle, just in case anyone wants to know. It might be strange. It might sound normal. I don't know. It just tastes good. Anyway, enjoyed the episode. As always, have a good week. That is bizarre.
Like, curry pot noodle with some sweet and sour dipping sauce. I get that.
Yeah.
What's the milk adding? Like,
maybe the sweet and sour, like, you know, adds that kind of heat that he's not accustomed to. So he, you know, brings
sweet
it down.
Sweet and sour does not add heat.
For some
no
people,
heat,
pepper is too much for them. I'm not saying I'm one of those people, but you have those vanilla guys and girls who just can't handle it.
My favorite.
He's already eating original curry pot noodle.
Yeah.
I'm fairly sure that's only like downgrading the spot.
I'm sure I've said this before, but one of my favorite ever jokes is Michael Owen finds vanilla ice cream too spicy, which is the best way of saying someone's boring that I've ever heard.
Fucking hell.
But yeah, the milk really throws me. I guess we've never really thought about food combos where you could have an unusual drink with it. I guess, like, I know. At school, I used to eat, when they let us out of the canteen and into the town, I would just buy a pack of pre-cooked chicken drumsticks from Marks and Spencer and a big bottle of chocolate milk. So I guess that kind of falls into the same gross
I had someone
situation.
Who did that in secondary school, but with the bacon rashes that you could just get that cooked.
Oh, yeah,
the chocolate
weird.
Milk. Yeah,
it's so unlike normal bacon. Actually, is my window open? No. The neighbour across the road from me, right? The other day, I was on the phone and I saw her drive up, park. She'd clearly been to the shops and she just drank an entire can of chocolate milk in her car before she got out of it to
Jesus
take her shopping
Christ.
In. Like, not even slowly, like fucking chugged it in about three goes.
That is fucking Dead Rising or something. Jesus
what I love, I was just looking at it, I was like, that's fucking the balls on it. Just to be like, I really want a chocolate milk, but I do not want to share this with my family. So I'm going to drink all of it now. Not even a little bottle.
I did see something very bizarre yesterday. My mate sent me a video. She's moving out of her place and there's a little balcony that's next to hers. And she saw a neighbor take out a big tub of ice cream. She starts scooping it with their hands like this.
Yes.
Like using a hand scoop and just going in. I was like, you got to be brave to do that shit.
People are savages when no one's looking.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Matt, why don't you read the next one?
Yeah, we've got one in from Luke who says, hi, gang. I hope you're all suitably cool this week with this lovely weather.
No.
I'm not Luke. I feel disgusting.
Yeah.
I've watched some, but not all, of the DC Universe films. Not blown away, but not equally disappointed either. One of the films that I haven't seen is the Justice League, and with all of the discussions around the Snyder Cut, my interest in seeing the film has returned. But which one should I see as my first time viewing? The possibly more consistently toned new cut that might be a bit disjointed from the lack of new shot footage, or the slightly wonkily toned original version. I intend to only watch it once. Choose wisely. Are there any cuts of films that you would recommend seeing for first time viewing over other cuts of the same film? Cheers, from Luke.
On your first point, I think if there's any chance that the Snyder Cut's going to be better than the original cut, just wait and watch the Snyder Cut. Like, give yourself the chance of watching something better than Justice League.
Isn't that going to be like 4 hours long, though? So he's deciding between like maybe a little time in his afternoon or an entire weekend.
Is it
like,
isn't Justice League nearly 3 hours long? I don't think it's.
Yeah.
Or is it two and a half?
It's at least two.
Oh, no, but the Snyder Cut, right? Like, isn't that going to potentially be super long?
I'm just not sure it's going to be an enormous difference as opposed
fair
to,
enough.
Well, maybe twice as long. But yeah, you know, you're right. I don't know. If it comes out as a TV series, maybe just watch the original and get it over with. I don't know. Perhaps I'm being unfair again. Are there any cuts you would recommend seeing for the first time viewing over other cuts? Blade Runner Final Cut is the one that springs to mind. Like, why bother? I just don't understand why you'd choose any other version of that film. There aren't many films with like substantially different cuts that I can
Lord of the Rings is usually the one that people often bring
up. Christ. As short a cut as you can find for that.
Oh yeah, you're the freak who hates Lord of the
Boring,
Rings.
On the wrong side
boring
of the fence.
Boring films.
Oh, it's fine. We can still be friends.
The director's cut of Aliens is very good and adds a little extra in than was in the theatrical cut.
Right, okay.
That's I think most people seem to actually have watched the director's cut, but that's got a lot more of the you know, the sequence where they set up the smart guns in the corridor. It's got a lot more of that. There's a lot more at the start, which gives you more context to Ripley.
Okay.
I in general think that the director's cut of that is better. I'm trying to think if there are any others that I've got that where like a director's or a redone later cut.
Isn't like Apocalypse Now has been cut like a million times?
Oh yeah, Redux is the one I think that people like.
So I think Redux is too long. It's too long.
Yeah.
I watched Manhunter the other day.
The Michael Mann one.
The version of Red Dragon that Michael Mann did before any of the Hopkins Hannibal films. And unwittingly watched the director's cut and thought that what I was watching was like fucked. But it turns out the director's cut of that film, Michael Mann liked certain scenes so much, even though those scenes were never mastered in any way. So mid-scene, the audio and visual elements of that scene will completely change for like sentences and then switch back again. It is awful.
Mad.
Like, I don't care if he likes that version of the film more. It is a bad watching experience. It's so strange.
This just reminded me. If you've never seen The Warriors, and you're planning on watching it, do not watch the Ultimate Director's Cut or whatever, because for some reason, they decided to add these, like, fucked up comic book transitions between most of the scenes, where, like, the camera zooms out and it's, like, it's fucking really shit-looking comic book style, and then it zooms back into the next scene. Don't ever do it. Just watch the original.
That sounds really poor.
It is disgusting.
That's a series of films. Right. this final piece is from John Summerfield. Hi, boys. Firstly, a bit of rampant speculation. But have any of you noticed? I think this is really interesting. I've not seen anyone else point this out. Have any of you noticed that the new Crash 4 trailer shows the titular bandicoot smashing his way back through time in a purple glass shard-like void? Very similar to the footage we saw of Ratchet smashing through time and space in a purple glass shard-like void. He included some pictures that I couldn't include in the running order because it didn't work. It's, like, nearly identical. It's really weird. Is this just a mad coincidence that two first-party PlayStation characters are flying through time and space in visually similar ways? Or are we finally going to get the PlayStation All-Stars kart racer crossover that we deserve? His words, very much not my words, on PS5. Here's hoping Naughty Dog tweets out a picture of Jack behind the same purple glassy void. Have either of you seen that?
I haven't seen the new, what's it called, fucking Crash trailer. But like, I know what he's talking about, but could this be the new Avengers setup? Are you going to get Uncharted and Crash?
It is like uncannily similar. Like, maybe like smashing through the void or whatever makes sense. But the fact that they are both like bright purple versions of the same thing is quite strange.
Could be a big coincidence.
I'm genuinely going to go and ask some developers. Fair enough. I thought that was quite fun. Secondly, he says, there's been so much talk about what we call ice pops and nothing about our favourite ice treats. Does anyone remember Nestle's Bug's Life Bug Pops? I did not remember these. They are a lime base, like a lime ice base. With a jelly bug filled lemon top.
Yes.
Oh, tangy and,
I remember
he
this.
He says, tangy and fresh on a hot afternoon with a delicious, chewy, sweet treat inside. On the chocolatey side, you can't beat a Mars bar ice cream. I agree. Mars bar ice creams are underrated. They're wicked. I don't remember bug pops at all, but they sound great.
No. Yeah, they were. You know the round tree, the Nestle round trees, the fruit pastel lollies.
I really hate those lollies, but yes.
Imagine something that looks a little bit like that, but there were like jelly spiders and creepy crawlies in the ice.
It's like it's like a gummy version of a feast, like with sweets inside your ice cream. You don't seem convinced by that.
it's obviously a very different construction, but yeah, the idea of biting through and getting something on the inside.
What was the what's the name of those like cones with a little bubblegum ball at the bottom?
Oh, they're great.
Screwballs?
Screwballs, yeah. They're That's dope. Why I don't remember the name, because people would have said it to me as my name.
Do you remember the ice cream that's shaped like a foot?
Yes. Was they just called Funky Foots?
It's Funny Foot.
Funky Foots. Funky Feet. Fucking hell. Come on, Scrabbles.
That Scrabbles. Is good.
Yeah. Oh, man, I want an ice cream so bad. I had a Magnum Double Caramel the other day, reminded that that is the greatest ice cream of all time. Unbelievable piece of equipment. I love it. If you've got a favourite ice cream, you can send it to us if you like. We might read it out if you say something interesting enough about it. IGN underscore UK feedback at IGN.com. That is all the time we have this week, because we've gone on for bloody ages and I want to eat lunch. I've had a lovely time. I hope you both have. And I hope the listeners have too. Oh, we've got to choose a song. What are we going to choose? Have we said any fun songs? We talked about Cyberpunk, Avengers, Sinner.
Do any ice creams or ice pops have any like themes to them? Like any sick advert tunes that we can throw in?
I have no idea, Jesse. Yeah. I've never thought about ice cream theme tunes before. We don't want to play any of the songs from the Sinner because they're really upsetting when you know the context for them. God. Cyberpunk. Oh, we can play one of the refused songs that's on YouTube. Samurai. Yes. We'll give you a little taste of the cyberpunk life and what Keanu Reeves will be shouting at you at some point.
Brilliant.
That's that. Anyway, bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.